Welcome to this edition of the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Podcast. Along with Chris Dorch, I'm Kevin Ingram. It is championship week for college basketball leading up to Selection Sunday. Only days away, we'll have a bracket by the time we talk to you again. Chris, what's going on, man? It's an exciting time, isn't it, as we make our way through the month of March?
Boy, it really is. We're coming to you a couple days earlier because, of course, you and I are going to be at the Southeastern Conference Tournament, where I expect it to be pretty exciting. It's always Rupp Arena South down there. those Kentucky fans, they're a crafty lot. And many take their vacations just to go to the SEC tournament because they can't get in to regular season games at Rupp. So that's going to be exciting. But I've had a lot of fun. I love championship week. This is going to sound like sacrilege. Almost as much as the NCAA, just because the sheer joy of seeing people win their conference tournaments and get into the big dance. Stetson, for example, I got to know Coach Donnie Jones when he was an assistant on those great Florida teams. And it's really from the SEC tournament because they would be scouting on press row. And you know, sure enough, they'd be sitting next to me and we'd shake hands and that's how I met a lot of coaches. Oh, yeah, you do Blue Ribbon. And then we get to talking and then you follow them over the years and you become friends with them or, you know, you have a business relationship with them. And good to see Donnie and his Stetson team. I think that's their first time in the big dance.
It is. It is.
And so and then there's a couple of teams. I'm just going to throw them out here right now that you better pick in your bracket. I think Samford is one. I've seen them live and a bunch on TV. Their goal is to press you on makes or misses and to hoist at least 23s. They've won 29 and won the SoCon against my alma mater, who could not throw it in the ocean. That they got that far with a team that really can't shoot that well is a testament to Brooke Savage, the first-year coach. And then I think the other team you got to watch out for is James Madison. I didn't know this. They're undefeated in November, December, January, and March. The only three losses, they're 31-3, having won the Sun Belt, were in February, where I can only imagine, you know, I guess conference play must have got a little crazy, but that's a good team. And Mark Byington is a great coach. I specifically watched him in their game last night, and he's such a chill dude, and you can see his players relate to him so well. I can see how he's been successful.
Yeah, I was going to go over the teams that had clinched already, including James Madison and Samford and Stetson, as well as Morehead State. They won the OVC and Longwood, and Drake won the Missouri Valley. It was wild to see Stetson win because I've been to that little gym down there, the Edmonds Center in DeLand.
Me too.
I mean, that's a tiny little place. But, I didn't realize that was the first time they'd ever made it to the NCAA tournament and the first time for Samford since 2000. So it's been a while. But Bucky Ball is working for the Bulldogs.
Yes, it is.
Let's go to the game that you saw in person on Saturday. Kentucky went to Tennessee and won 85-81 to finish up the regular season. Tennessee had already clinched the regular season in the SEC by beating South Carolina earlier in the week, but Kentucky grabbed the number two seed for the SEC tournament. Antonio Reeves and Reed Shepard were awesome. They each scored 27. Dalton Knecht, the SEC Player of the Year, had 40 to seal that deal for Tennessee. But Kentucky shot 51% from three. They made 15 out of 29. They made almost all their free throws. They were 16 out of 18. When they shoot like that, I don't care what kind of defense they play, they're going to be an awful tough out when it comes to the NCAA tournament.
Absolutely. I recorded an appearance on Tom Leach's voice, Oh the Cats, yesterday, and he told me an incredible stat. Kentucky this season has made 15 threes in a game five times. And some statistician that feeds him stuff told him that hadn't been matched in the previous 998 games. So I said, Tom, get out your calculator and divide 35 into 998. And he says, holy cow, that's like 28 and a half years since, you know, Kentucky has been you know, that prolific from three.
Yeah, probably talking about the early days of Pitino when they really put up tons and tons
exactly.
of threes.
Exactly. And they couldn't even, you know, this is a better, more prolific three-point shooting team, even than those Pitino teams. And Pitino was the first power conference coach to really embrace the three, even as far back as his Providence days when he led them to the Final Four. But, yeah, I'm telling you, I'm – of course, in the U.S. basketball writers, I have a vote for freshman of the year, their freshman of the year. And I put Reed Shepard as my first guy. Rob Dillingham is my second. Those two guys, you talked about Dillingham last podcast, but Shepard, I'm convinced, and he has great lineage. Both of his parents played for Kentucky. And his mom was a ball-hawking defender. And his dad, of course, Jeff Shepard, shooter and jumper, kind of a little bit of a Rex Chapman type. But this kid, he's the best shooter, no question. This is going to sound again like blaspheme to Kentucky fans, but I think he's better than Kyle Macy was. He is just textbook, automatic, pure, whatever you want to say. If you leave him open, it's down. And Tennessee left him open too much. On the other side of the court, Dalton Connect was kind of a one-man show. It's crazy. There are fifth-year seniors, Josiah Jordan-James and Vescovi. Vescovi was like 0-5. He passed up a three that would have tied it late. It's funny. The last play he makes on that court is typical of his 5 years. Unselfish to a fault.
Yeah.
He just passed up so many shots. I wish he would have. Tennessee fans would wish he would have been like the first game he played, when really literally just off the plane from Australia, he plays against LSU, starts and makes six threes. But yeah, Kentucky. Every time I see them win, I think, who can beat these guys? How can it happen? If they're all on like this, and they've got DJ Wagner didn't even do that much. And he was like the number one freshman. Justin Edwards played well too in the first half. He made four threes. You were wondering when Tennessee was going to figure out, hey, maybe we need to guard this dude. But every time I see them win, I think, man, who can take these dudes? I don't know. They're not a vintage Cal defensive team, and I can only surmise it's because they rely so much on young players, and defense just is not ingrained in young players. But jacking it up from three is, and they've got some flamethrowers.
I was thinking about your Reed Shepard and Kyle Macy comparison a moment ago, and it got me to thinking about who the best three-point shooters I'd seen for Kentucky over the years. Tony Dell comes to mind. I mean, you look at his career numbers, they're off the charts. In more recent times, Devin Booker and Jamal Murray, I mean, those guys, they could knock them down one after another. But like you say, when they're all on, they're going to be almost impossible to beat, because you just can't score enough points to keep up with them. And I think Justin Edwards is a little bit of an unsung player for them.
We had him as our freshman of the year in Blue Ribbon. Mm-hmm. And I talked to several people that I trust, including Paul Biancardi from ESPN. And I said, man, who from this Kentucky bunch should I make newcomer of the year? And everybody thought Justin Edwards would get the reps, and he has size, positional size, and was highly rated. And then really the guy that I heard rumors from some of the Kentucky press when I was at the game that Kentucky wasn't even sure at one time whether they wanted to take Reed Shepard. And I just can't fathom that. Man, if I were starting a team, he might be my first pick. Yeah, that guy can grill it.
But he can also pass, and he has great court vision, and he's always, head up looking
great
down the court and can find, make the right play, throw the right pass.
He's a dude.
Yeah, he is. He's been outstanding.
And he's totally chill, man. I mean, if he has an emotion, he doesn't wear it on his sleeve. He just goes to business. And, you can tell his parents were ballers. I mean, he was taught, they probably put a basketball in the crib, as soon as they brought him home.
I saw this big photo on social media the other day, and it was an old picture from the 90s of Jeff Shepard and Stacey Reed in their basketball uniforms with the caption, the Joseph and Mary of Kentucky basketball. And then one of the comments was, okay, that might be a little over the top.
Might be stretching it a bit, but I'll tell you, this kid could lead him to the promised land for sure.
He very well could.
He could. I'm telling you, I'm very impressed with him. I had seen them many times on television, but I wanted to go to see them live. And wow, they're going to be a tough out. And the reason I say that is because you look at teams of recent vintage that have won it. Villanova twice, Virginia, last year UConn, all had dudes that could stroke it. And sure, NCAA games evolve into half-court rock fights. That's an inevitable. But if you can shoot, if you've got four 35, I don't know, high 30s to low 40s shooters, I mean, Shepard's almost a legendary 90-50, 50-40-90 shooter, which, I mean, he's shooting 53% from three now, and he's just under 90% from the free throw line. So, yeah, they've got all kinds of dudes like him. They didn't even need DJ Wagner the other day. It just incredible. And like you said last podcast, they got bigs for days. If they can ever figure out just how to slow people down, they've got a real chance.
They'll be the number two seed for the SEC tournament, which gets cranked up this week. It starts on Wednesday night. I'll be doing the Vanderbilt-Arkansas game, and things really get rolling with the four games on Thursday. The top seeds, Tennessee is the one, Kentucky the two, Alabama three, and Auburn four. All those teams figure to be in the tournament. So does South Carolina, which came close to winning the regular season title. Florida, which I've seen twice. I like that team. They got a lot of pieces. I think they could do some damage in the tournament. They figure to be in. I know a lot of people think Mississippi State will make it. Texas A&M seems to be on the outside looking in. But SEC, according to Lenardi, figures to get seven teams. Big 12 will likely have the most with eight or nine. The Big 12 tournament, Kansas is going to be without their all-Big 12 first-teamers. Hunter Dickinson has a shoulder injury from their game with Houston, and Kevin McCullough Jr. has a knee injury. He's been battling that for a while. They hope to have those guys good to go for the NCAA tournament. But, man, that just feels like it leaves the runway wide open for Houston to land the plane and get things done in the Big 12 tournament after they handled Kansas the other day. So that should be a fun tournament to watch, too. I'm like you. I know the NCAA tournament is what everybody waits for, but I really enjoy a lot of these conference tournaments. And you can debate how much the power conference tournaments really mean in terms of teams getting in or being left out or seeding or all those things, but they're still fun to watch.
The thing about the mid-majors is that they're just, to them, that is their national championship.
It is. It's like a three-day season. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, and it's just this unbridled joy to see them win it and be able to get in there and compete. And I'll tell you what, some of them have really, you know, Fairleigh Dickinson, for example, St. Peter's, you know, George Mason, I can go on. You got to be careful now. You've got to do your scouting, and the three-point goal and the shot clock, I know they're not recent innovations, but they certainly drew teams closer together in a one-shot opportunity. If you can make threes, you can beat people. So, that's why I really like Samford. They toss the three ball up a lot, but their pressure defense is unbelievable. And the other thing is Bucky, he subs in and out like a hockey coach. They've got 10 dudes or 11 that they're not afraid to go, you know, and they're pressing all the time and shooting. They've got a good big man, which you always look for. And then James Madison, similarly, they've got a good big man. They've got guys that can score and they're well coached. So I look for those two to do some damage.
Yeah. And those teams that are the lower seeds, sometimes they're older teams too, and those guys have played together a lot, and that serves them well when they get in a tournament situation against a high major team that might have very, very talented but inexperienced players who haven't really been in that spot before. And then when the pressure gets on, then those older guys who've played and they've been through pressure situations together, that comes through. This will probably be another NCAA tournament where you have a million upsets, and it's going to be crazy and wild just because the teams are closer together than they've ever been, especially with all the transfers and the way players move and everything. I mean, even the teams that are double-digit seeds, everybody's got somebody that's a really good player, and probably more than that, especially if you're still playing at this point. So, Lenardi, as we look at it right now, Indiana State is the last team in. I say put them in, man. That team is good. Yeah. They're fun to watch. Drake beat them in the Missouri Valley Championship game. But I think everybody wants to see Robbie Avila play in the NCAA tournament. I know I do.
Yeah, this cat. Let's just say he doesn't seem like he's in the best physical condition. He's a guy like you might see at the Y in the men's league. And he's got these goggles that he wears, and he's tatted up and stuff. But I'll tell you what, overlook him at your own peril. You know, you might say, who's this dork? But then he'll zip a pass for an easy layup, uh-huh, or score on you in the post. He's a player. And I just love the way they're coached. Josh was at LMU. And I, for the life of me, can't understand why athletic directors will keep recycling old D1 coaches or try to find an assistant off a successful power conference team when they could easily dip down into D2, into NAIA, and find coaches who are used to winning and know how to win and know how to lead young men. And that's certainly the case with Josh Schertz. He is picked up right where he left off at Indiana State, and he's going to be a hot name. Somebody's going to poach him, I'm sure.
Indiana State, the last one in, according to Joe Lenardi's latest bracket, along with St. John's, Virginia, and Colorado. The last four byes are Michigan State, Seton Hall, TCU, and Mississippi State. First four out, Texas A&M. To me, they've been on the outside looking in for a little bit here. New Mexico, Wake Forest, Villanova, and then Pittsburgh, Iowa, Providence. Has the Big 12 with 9, SEC with 7, the Big East with 6. You mentioned coaches and the coaching carousel, and all that will really crank up too here in the next few days as more teams see their season come to an end. Also, some rumors out there about the Louisville job, with Kenny Payne presumably done as head coach at his alma mater. I've seen a lot of talk about Scott Drew from Baylor. He seems to have a lot going for him there, where he's won a national championship. They also have a brand new arena. They play in a great conference in the Big 12. I don't know. I mean, is the lure of going and coaching really a traditional power program that has a lot of money? What would that be for him if he even considered it? I think that's a really, really attractive job at Louisville, but
he couldn't be afraid of the rebuild, because he surely wouldn't be afraid of the rebuild, because the Baylor rebuild is the best in history. I mean, remember the craziness that had gone down there?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Teammate killed another teammate, and there was cover-ups and all kinds of stuff. It was in the trash heap. So he could do the Louisville job, but like you say, I don't know that he'd want to. He's in a great league, and not that the ACC is in a great league, but let's be honest, the ACC was a little late to the party in building a super conference. SEC kind of started it out with Oklahoma and Texas, and then the Pac-12 disintegrates, and then it's a free-for-all. ACC takes two teams from out west. It's just insanity. And SMU, I just don't know what SMU adds to the mix. No offense. When you look at Big Ten, Big 12, and the SEC, of course. So I just don't see Scott Drew making that move. I wonder who would take it. And there's been some talk. I think Rick Bozich, friend of the show, wrote a column about maybe how he might deserve one more year. And I just don't know that they can do that from a financial standpoint. That's when ADs have to pull the trigger. Well, somebody told me when the school where I teach, Chattanooga, went up there and won, the crowd was announced at 5,000, and they swear it was more like 1,500. So, I mean, an AD has to weigh, you know, do we buy this guy out or do we keep losing our shirts on tickets, concessions, parking, and what have you? And that's when you really, and then, I don't know, Kenny's a great guy, but he's just said some wild things. I don't know, some things that make you wonder, does he know where he is? You know, this is an ACC job. This is Louisville. Obviously, he knows where he is. He played there, but I don't know. I just don't know that he was ready for that kind of step, even though he'd come from Cal staff. I just don't know. And who takes his place? It'll be a coveted job for sure. They'll command a well-respected head coach unless they take a chance on a Josh Schertz. I guarantee you Josh Schertz could go in there and shake that up, the Indiana State coach.
But what you said is correct about attendance and those things. And when you look around a 20,000-seat arena and it's mostly empty and the team's losing all the time, you know, that's hard
dollar
to recover
signs
from.
Floating through the air.
Exactly. I mean, and that's a program that's been the highest grossing college basketball program in the country as far as making money based on that arena and the suites and all that stuff that they have there and just the success of that program for years and years. And there are the rumors about Porter Moser going from Oklahoma to DePaul. Why in the heck would he do that? That just sounds silly.
It's insane.
Yeah, you had Missouri State firing Dana Ford, which surprised me a little bit. He's a really good dude.
Met him
when he was at Tennessee State. Justin Gray goes from Western Carolina to Coastal Carolina to replace Cliff Ellis. Mike Hopkins out at Washington. How attractive is that job with a conference change for the Huskies?
You know, it's going to be a tough situation where they go. I hate it for Coach Hop. He started out really strong there. And then for whatever reason, just kind of each year kind of slipped away from him. But it'll be a coveted job for sure. I was talking to an assistant about Justin Gray. You know, he had come from Winthrop. He was their third man. And Winthrop took Western Carolina's coach. So it's like, they took the low man on the totem pole of Winthrop and traded their head coach for him. And he had, you know, he roomed with Chris Paul at Wake Forest, and the rumors were that Chris contributed to the program. And I wondered about him, but he really rebuilt Western Carolina in a hurry. And I was texting with a power conference assistant that I know, and I said, wow, that was a quick move. And he said, have you ever been to Cullowhee? And yes, I have, many times. And it's remote. I love the mountains, but maybe Justin's a beach guy. I don't know. But Coastal is a tough job, too. Cliff Ellis, who was going to probably hang in one more year, he saw in December, like, I need to go, you know, with my head held high. So, but if Western Carolina, the job he did there is any indication, Justin Gray will get it done at Coastal. And you can recruit kids to the beach for sure. I remember a coach many years ago at Western Carolina. I said, how do you get guys to come up here? And he said, I recruit guys that like to hunt and fish. And I'm like, you don't find those in the inner city.
And Justin Gray, we saw their team. They came to Vanderbilt and played back earlier in the season. And he seemed like a really good dude. I mean, he was a terrific player at Wake Forest back in the day. But, yeah, makes the move across the state to Coastal Carolina. But we'll see more of these coaching vacancies start to happen in the next few days, and it'll be interesting to see who lands where. As always, Chris, you'll be landing here in Nashville for the SEC tournament. Looking forward to seeing you later this week. We'll watch some ball together. We'll eat some tacos and hang out. So looking forward to that, and should be a fun week as we lead into Selection Sunday.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And one more thing I wanted to mention before we go, Zach Edey had his number retired after the game at Purdue. Is that not the fastest number retire ever? There's usually a lot of schools make you wait like five years.
A little while.
I mean, it's like, hey, game's over. Your jersey's in the rafters.
You might as well go ahead and do
it.
Well, I mean, he was, you know, if you're National Player of the Year, probably two times, and go ahead and put it up there because you're going to do it anyway, right?
I voted for him in the USBWA balloting. You just got to do it. I mean, you could make a case for Dalton Kincaid, but he was hurt. He had an ankle injury after the North Carolina game where he scored 37. And for about 2 weeks, he was in single digits. And if you'd have given him that 2 weeks back healthy, the way he really has gone crazy, I've never seen a guy go crazy like Dalton Kincaid. But I think Zach Edey, just for the sheer consistency and the fact that his team is number one. Now, everybody's going to be holding their breath if you're a Purdue fan to get past that first round, you know, or some hope that they don't play a school from New Jersey, whoever it might be, and they're going to be okay. But yeah, it was cool to see his number retired. And, you know, he's a native Canadian, and he had his people there, and it was just a really cool thing to see.
Chris, always fun. Talk to you soon, my man.
All right, buddy.
He's Chris Dorch. I'm Kevin Ingram. That is the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Podcast. We'll talk to you next time.